This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 15th of September 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Muller. My guest today is the author and Times rock critic Will Hodgkinson. We'll be discussing the latest solo record by Keith Richards, a new track from American songwriter Julia Holter, and what feels like roughly the 300th Prince album to have been hopefully declared his best since Love Sexy. That's all coming up on the Monocle Arts Review. Do stay tuned. Will, welcome back to the Arts Review.
Thank you, Andrew.
We're going to start with Prince. Now, people who heard my introduction there may have detected a soupçon of scepticism at this point about Prince. And I mean, I'm a fellow rock critic as well, and I just feel like for a long time now we have been collectively playing Charlie Brown to Prince's Lucy Van Pelt holding the football.
Well, I agree with you, and that's because we all love Prince, and we wish he was still doing amazing things. This album is an example. He hasn't got a label. He hasn't got a manager, a manager to tell him what to do, at least. There's nobody to tell him what to do. He's got people working for him, and this is the problem. There's beautiful songs in this album, absolutely fantastic, but there's also songs that are just absolutely below par and not that interesting. So this is, to me, it's give him enough rope, you know.
The album's called Hit and Run Phase One. I think parts of the title are pointlessly capitalised. His sort of career-long fondness for irritating punctuation and phraseology continues.
Yeah, he loves that.
You are absolutely right. This is what has struck me, especially in his long odyssey through the label-free wilderness. There is nobody in his circle occasionally taking him to one side and going, Prince, mate, this is terrible.
No, they don't dare. The thing is about Prince is that he's so incredibly talented. He can play anything. He will work harder than anyone else. You know, he's a very unusual character. He's completely pure living, all because he wants to make music all the time. So any musician who comes to work for him, it's a dream come true. He can play anything, and he's going to work you very, very hard. And if you're good enough, you'll be rewarded. But he doesn't have a really good... I just think he needs a good producer. You know, I don't mean a good producer in terms of, you know, a guy to just get a great sound, but a good producer who is a good editor, you know, who's going to tell him what to do and is going to sharpen it up, because he's just producing stuff all the time.
Well, as I also said there in the introduction, or alluded to in the introduction, it is my contention that his last actual album actually worth owning all of is Love Sexy, and that's what, 1987, 88?
That's a while. I actually liked... He did two albums last year. There's one called Artificial Age.
I would be lying if I said I have listened to assiduously to everything he has produced in the last... I mean, who's got that kind of time?
Well, exactly. I mean, you get Prince Obsessives, you know. And this is only the tip of the iceberg, of course. He's got this famous vault of stuff that, you know, one day will all come out. But it's, you know, it's frustrating because the song, you know, June, which I think is the best song in the album, is just a beautiful ballad. And you think, that's fantastic. And you could have crafted an album of songs of that quality, but somebody had to stop you. Like, somebody's got to stop all of us. You know, if someone let me, I'd write a 2,000-page novel, you know, but no one's going to let me.
I speak as that person who has once submitted a 250,000-word first draft, only for his editor to have a series of fairly brisk words with him.
Exactly.
You did mention the track June, which is the one you have select. Let's hear a bit of it now.
Pasta simmers on the stove in June. Makes no sense yet, but it will soon. Conversation starters come way too hard. Nobody wants to be the martyr playing the wrong card.
Prince there with June, the first selection by today's guest critic, Will Hodgkinson. You're right, that is a nice tune. I liked that.
It's good.
The album is called Hit and Run Phase One. Should Phase One be interpreted more of a threat or a promise?
I think Phase 257 might happen by this time next year. You know, you just can't tell. He's been doing these Hit and Run concerts, which, again, I love the fact that Prince is working outside of the usual constraints. He's just turning up at a place and doing a gig. You know, the tickets are announced that day. It's incredible. But I just wish, you know, he's still got this incredible, he's like he's the last silent movie star or something. He's still got this glamour, which, no, you know, he's the sort of Gloria Swanson of rock and roll. No one else has got that because they all want to be men of the people these days. And I love that about him. And I love the fact that he doesn't obey the rules. But I just wish that, you know, Love Sexy and Around the World in a Day and those amazing albums, which, you know, Purple Rain, they were masterpieces.
Final thought on this, though. Those masterpieces you mentioned, the Around the World in a Day's, Love Sexy, Sign of the Times, etc., etc., if they're all worth a solid 10 out of 10, and I think we can probably agree they are, where are we ranking this one?
I would say probably around 6.
Okay, he's done worse. He's certainly done worse.
Oh, no, definitely.
let's move on to your second selection. This is Julia Holter, as she has an album, Have You in My Wilderness, due at the end of next week. Two songs from the album released so far. We'll shortly be hearing one of them. Before we do that, introduce her, if you would.
Julia Holter, Californian, classically trained, experimental musician. The kind of person who, when I first heard her, I could admire and find it very hard to love her music. I think the first thing she did was to take a 1920s cookbook and turn it into a kind of John Cage-style minimalist piece, which
I am already reaching for my revolver at this point.
Exactly. You know, it was all so clever. And you know, I'd hear these albums and I think, oh, I know I'm meant to like this. I know it's really clever. I know that there's nothing else like this. It's just so painful. Then this album came along and it's amazing. It's absolutely brilliant. It's like every song's a pop song, but like a pop song you've never heard before. It doesn't have normal verses and choruses, but you go away humming them. You know, they're tunes. They're really, really good. They're very emotional. The obvious comparison is the kind of Kate Bush, Bjork world, but in a way she's even less conventional than them. It's very strange music, but it's great songs.
Do you have any idea what changed? Does it? Because I think it's often the case that, especially with early records by extremely gifted, talented people, they really want to let you know how gifted and talented they are to the exclusion of everything else. Has she perhaps just, for want of a less pejorative term, calmed down a bit?
I think she might have done. It might also be poverty. You never know. You know, there might be only so many incredibly experimental albums you can make before the rent is way overdue. It might be that. I think it's also, you know, she came out of music college and probably was using everything that she could. And now she's, I mean, I think writing a brilliant song is the hardest thing in the world. You know, I think
incredibly difficult.
I admire anyone who can write a fantastic pop song. So the fact that she's done that now, but she's done it in a way that is really experimental and unusual, I think is to be applauded.
Okay, well, this is Sea Calls Me Home by Julia Holter.
When the sea called me, when the sea called me home, I can't swim its lucidity.
Sea Calls Me Home by Julia Holter, a second selection from today's Arts Review guest, Will Hodgkinson. I'd really like that. That's got it's got a touch of the Nico Case, Jenny Lewis type about it, I think.
It does, but then there are other songs which are really, really, you know, really strange. And that's what I like. It's got that kind of Californian pop sound, and she's got a beautiful voice. But then she can incorporate these very avant-garde ideas, but she does it in a subtle way. So that's what I like. It doesn't feel like a showing-off album. It feels like anything has got to be subsumed into a greater vision than just her own ego.
It's an important step. And to return to Prince, who we discussed earlier, I think it's still a mistake he makes. I mean, when I've seen him live, and I haven't seen him live for a long time for this reason, it was just always the thing. If there's one guy you ever want to see, just go out and play the damn hits and don't clown around, it's him. But the sort of the 20-minute-long funky jams and half-hour-long guitar solos, and it's, you know, like, dude, we know you can play it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Save it for the rehearsal room.
But is the whole album, Have You in My Wilderness, is it all up there? Is it that good?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, I was listening to it today and I was waiting in my kind of cynical critic's way for a bad song so I could mark it down. I couldn't find one.
I really like those records, though. The ones where you think, okay, the next track's going to be the one that annoys me, and it never quite happens.
It never happened. It's really, really good. And it's not a hard album to listen to. It's actually a very easy album to listen to. And the songs are love songs, really.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's Have You in My Wilderness by Julia Holter. That's out in later this month, September 25th, on Domino, and that was C Calls Me Home. Finally, to the proverbial, or in fact very definition of the man who requires almost no introduction. Keith Richards, we were discussing this before we came on air because, dear listener, rock critics do actually talk like this, about Rolling Stones and about how very, very long it has been that they have been, frankly, terrible. You were slightly more charitable than I was. You're suggesting Some Girls, which I think, without looking it up, is about 1978, was their last great album.
That's right. And then I would say that there are great songs on, well, there's Undercover of the Night. I can't even remember the name of the album now. Very famous one. But that's a great song. That must be about 80, 81.
And I'm putting it, my cutoff is earlier than that. I think the Imperial period, late 60s, early 70s, is faultless. And after that, you can pretty much keep it. But either way, we can agree that they have, you know, with all due respect, etc., they have been terrible for a long time, the Rolling Stones.
Well, I am the biggest apologist for the Rolling Stones you're going to find. I mean, I'm the guy who'll go and see them, and they will be terrible, and I'll be there screaming along to Happy, or, you know, You Can't Always Get What You Want. I love them. And what I don't love, which I think is, I'm not alone here, the Stones just cannot do it alone. I mean, Mick Jagger's solo albums, Keith Richards' solo albums, they're not good.
But it is a common phenomenon throughout rock and roll that all great bands are more than the sum of their parts. I mean, you know, the Beatles being only the most obvious example, the number of great bands who once split up have gone on to produce endless numbers of, at best, inferior solo records, and at worst, just completely inexplicable ones. On that scale, between at best inferior and at worst inexplicable, where does Keith's new one rate?
Well, Keith's one isn't too bad if you're not too demanding, and if you like country, if you like country blues, which I do, and if you like a slide guitar country tinged love songs, I love all that stuff. But what it doesn't do, and this is what I'd really want from Keith Richards now at the age of 71, I just want some sense of reality. I want to get an idea of how life really is for him. But instead, we kind of get this, you know, we get a Gregory Isaacs cover, a reggae song, which just makes you think of him swanning around on his yacht rather than, you know, the sort of shanty towns of Kingston.
But the Rolling Stones can't get real, though, can they? Their whole thing is about being basically pretending they're still 25.
I guess that's what it is. But the thing is that then if they completely pretended, it would be okay. But, you know, there are these sort of concessions to getting older and everything. And I love Keith Richards. I think he's, you know, I love his hairstyle, even to this day. You know, I think he's fantastic. So I really, really wanted to like this album, but it's just kind of average.
Okay, the album is called Cross-Eyed Heart, and this is Robbed Blind.
So I hit the usual suspects, but I drew a blank round there. I'm robbed blind.
Robbed Blind by Keith Richards from his third solo album, Cross-Eyed Heart. It's almost literally exactly what you would expect it was going to sound like, isn't it?
When Keith Richards speaks, you know, when he's being interviewed, or you see him on telly, he's so charismatic and charming, but the voice, it's just not there.
I was thinking that as well. I have done the Keith Richards interview, admittedly on the phone from his doubtless considerable property in the Bahamas or wherever it is. And as you say, he was extraordinarily expansive and charming and generous in unsurprising direct contrast to his longtime sparring partner, who basically was just trying to
get away.
After about 20 minutes, he was ending every answer. Is that enough? I'm bored. Can I go now?
Yeah.
They do both live up to every stereotype you would have of them quite marvellously. But how much is the album just let down by the fact that Keith, bless him, really can't sing? Is it possible to imagine that if the songs had been sung by somebody else, it might have taken flight a bit more?
Well, there are definitely songs where you just want Mick Jagger to strut into the studio, you know, sort of do a sort of, you know, kind of limp wrist and belt into the mic. So you're missing that. I mean, the songs are okay. It's like I said, if you love Keith Richards and you know that you know the kind of stuff he does electric blues, country blues, a bit of country, that's what it is. But the songs are not amazing, and so then, you know, have a cover version like Goodnight Irene, which is a lovely song, you know, lovely old standard, but it's, you're thinking, yeah, this is actually a much better song than the rest of them, isn't it?
Well, Cross-Eyed Heart by Keith Richards is out this Friday, 18th of September, on Republic Records. That brings us to the end of today's show. Will Hodgkinson, thanks again for joining me. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Andrew Muller, here on Monocle 24. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at this time tomorrow for the week's TV review. But for now, thanks very much for listening.